Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal.
And I'm Todd Wilson, regional president of Greater Los Angeles for PNC Bank.
Every episode, we sit down with leaders who built, scaled, or reimagined companies that shaped the way Los Angeles does business.
And today, we have a truly inspiring story. Our guest is someone who didn't just break barriers, she redefined what's possible in American enterprise. She's the founder and chief executive officer of Act One Group, the largest privately held minority women-owned workforce solutions company funded in the U.S. She also made history as the first African-American woman to build and own a billion-dollar company.
Think about that for just a moment. Founding a business with a phone, $1,500, and a bold vision, and then taking it and turning that into a global enterprise spanning now 47 countries, serving 23,000 clients, and employing thousands worldwide.
And her journey is one of courage, persistence, and absolutely intentional leadership. It's about scaling with purpose, empowering others, and building a company designed to last, not just for a year or two, but for generations.
Nearly five decades later, Act One Group remains privately held, family-led, and driven by a mission to connect great companies with great talent. Janice Bryant Howroyd, or as you shared that you prefer to be called, JBH, welcome to C-Speak.
Oh, thank you. I feel really welcome. Thanks, Todd. Thanks, Josh.
Absolutely.
It's great to have you here. We're going to go back in time, right? So you founded Act One Group in 1978. Mm-hmm. $1,500, a fax machine, which some of our listeners don't even know what that is, right? And a phone. What was going through your mind when you decided to start your very own workforce solutions company? Where did that come from?
So let's be clear. Growing up as a little girl in the Deep South, I did not have visions of starting a workforce solutions group. Didn't know what one was, and I would dare say many people didn't as well. But what happened is a visit to California. I came out on a vacation visiting my sister Sandy and her husband Tommy Noonan. They both worked in the music industry, and so I was flabbergasted by everything I saw, the people I met. Imagine this. My sister picks me up. We called them punch buggies back then. You remember the convertible Volkswagens?
Oh, yeah.
Beetle. And she picked me up at the airport in her, I like to call it Doris Day Blue, French Blue Beetle. She loaded my luggage into it. We pulled up at her place in Ladera Heights, and on the floor, sleeping from a late night event they had was Elton John.
Oh, wow. And,
right. And Gregory Hines. And I thought, wow. Is this how my sister lives? Now, I found out very quickly that it was work, and it was hard work that they did. But I had a ball here, and it was kind of a paradoxical thing because on the one hand, I felt that here I am, this little nappy-headed colored girl up out of North Carolina in Los Angeles where everybody was gorgeous. Everybody carried a purse with somebody else's signatures on it, and everybody was important. My sister helped me work with myself a little bit. And so here I am sitting with you now all these years later, and kudos to her.
Kudos to you, first of all. But
wow.
So most founders or many founders talk about having connections or having the funding and that being the reason they grew. But you said exactly the opposite. You said that not having that much actually made you bolder. What did this boldness look like early on, and why could you be so bold?
So we grew up, my 10 siblings and I, in a home in North Carolina with one mom, one dad, and a lot of church. I'm talking old-fashioned Baptist church. So most of what we learned as mommy-isms or daddy-isms, but really they were just borrowed from scripture. And one of the things that helped me to be bold was something I'd hear mom say all the time. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Look at me now. I'm years later. My closest friends come from every faith, every circumstance you could imagine. And as you just mentioned, practically every free and democratic country. And that still holds true, though. Having that confidence in your higher power does oftentimes tend to overwhelm the data that's put in front of you that may suggest for one reason or the other, you can or cannot do something. And I don't want to oversimplify it, because a lot of it was also that I stayed very close to my family. We grew up with another mommyism, Together We Win, which you'll see in a lot of my company content today. Together We Win is a big principle for me. And it suggested a lot about how I grew up. It also suggests a lot about how the company was able to evolve to where we are, so that we can bring that culture to people from across different geographies.
So a lot of it was really ingrained from childhood and from family.
So much. And let's just say this, the best things that I've learned in my life, no matter where I've grown my business to, and you're looking at somebody who not only helps people find work, we provide solutions about how work gets done. My son and daughter just invested in a company, and now we're presenting work solutions that are agentic in nature. Wow. And I still can tell you those fundamental values that we grew up with in our home were the best gift to me as a business person. They have influenced not only the business culture that I have worked with some incredible employees to evolve. They've created the confidence, or the boldness as you referred to earlier. More importantly, they've created the ability to have a future vision that's unimpaired by current circumstances.
So I've heard you speak before, and you often credit resourcefulness over resources in your success. Talk a little more about some of these values or principles early that reflect that mindset.
There is a guiding principle in our organization, and I've shared a little bit of it with you about Together We Win, right? But it is actually not something I evolved. It is something that I've evolved from. Okay. And that, have you ever heard of a guy called Earl Nightingale?
Mm-hmm.
So Earl Nightingale said of success, success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. That fits very well with my personal culture, and it certainly has supported my business culture. So for me, we were able to then work as a team and create our core values as a company. This is what has helped us not only to grow from that one little office at 9008 Wilshire Boulevard into many offices across the globe, and many of them are virtual offices now. And our core values are, as we say, what we stand for and what we stand on. Feet, freedom to innovate, excellence in delivery, everything and everyone matters, so invest the time to understand. F-E-E-T. That's carried us across the globe.
I love that. That's wonderful. I'm going to be re-listening to that portion down the road here.
It does require boldness, though.
Yeah.
When you say that the feet you stand on are about freedom to innovate, that means you're giving people not just the permission, you're giving the permission and the encouragement to fail sometimes, fail fast. Yes, fail, to make mistakes, to do it out loud and in front of each other. And some of our best solutions have come from that type of culture. When we talk about everything and everyone matters, that is about the people who are in front of the customer, the people who are behind the solutions we're designing, as well as the folks who greet you if you happen to come into an office, because these days, you know, sometimes we just link in with each other. But yeah, it does require some boldness to stand on those values.
Well, I think about, you know, some of the stats I shared. And as I introduced you, Act One Group now operates in 47 countries. You've got more than 23,000 clients. By the way, I don't think I could, with a pen and paper, even write out 47 countries. I don't know how you manage 47, you know, offices and teams throughout the world. Here's a question I've got for you. As you're growing, you've been growing for 50 years.
Yeah.
Okay. You could have stopped at 15. Mm-hmm. You could have stopped at 22 countries. But there's something that keeps driving that growth. What is it?
You'll hear CEOs, founders say this often. It is the lifeline of who we are, and that is incredible employees. We hire people into our organization with the requirement, not just the opportunity, for them to act entrepreneurially. So they define new solutions. They look at new marketplaces. They bring that inside of the organization, and they get tested against it quite rigorously before the yes happens. So often, though, I'm happy the yes has happened, and that's where the growth has happened. Now, oftentimes that's at the request of clients. I can't imagine a better way to grow than to have clients ask you to do this there for them that you've done for them here. And actually, our first office outside of the U.S. was at the request of a client. So
Where was that located?
In London.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so it's been a real partner journey between having incredible employees, and these team members are able to create culture relationships with our clients. And you hear me lean a lot in on culture because it is so important to understand. There are two things that I'm going to share with you. One is about the 47 and not being able to remember all the names of the countries. You know, I have a top secret clearance and I serve on federal level committees. And one of the things that kind of will stay with me forever as I think back over my career is having completed successfully an audit. You know, they audit you quite rigorously and periodically once you've gotten a top secret security clearance. I completed it. Everything was fine and going on. And then they called and said they wanted to come back out. They couldn't understand how I'd been to so many countries as they changed personnel. Right. So you're in great company, Josh, to not be able to grasp all these countries. But I have to tell you that just really looking at that is not just about the number of countries. It is then about the cultures of these countries. And that's the second thing I want to share with you is there's a man who he's in heaven now. I think he's in heaven. Jack, are you up there? Jack Shoemaker owned the second largest amount of Walmart stock to the Walton family. And he, for some reason, God blessed me with him as a mentor in my life. And he invited me out to Bentonville, and my husband and my son accompanied me there. And during that time, he shared with me, because he designed the HR systems for Walmart in the early days. He was the second employee, I think, to Mr. Sam. And he shared that when they opened up, Walmart opened up in Australia, they thought they would have some immediate success because of the value they brought. The geographical needs would be very similar to many of the Walmart communities in the U.S., and they failed. And they failed because they thought they knew what the people wanted, but they didn't understand the culture of the people. And since then, you started to see my Walmarts pop up. And that was all about understanding the culture of the people in the immediate community. So if you go to East Tarboro Walmart, you're going to see more orange Kool-Aid than you may see cherry Kool-Aid and on and so forth. Understanding not just what the customer needed, but who the customer is and how they needed that. And I think that fueled a lot of our ability to sustain growth across countries is certainly to go in and lean in on what we have in common, to not allow that to overwhelm where we needed to look at those unique differences that make us a community.
We've talked about what you've built over the almost 50 years you've been running this company. Let's look forward a little bit. How much farther can this go? How much bigger can this get? How much more can this grow?
So what the mind can conceive and believe it can achieve. Firmly, I believe that. It goes beyond belief, though, and there's a knowing in it. I will say my son and my husband, who's in heaven right now, up there with Jack, I guess, will say, oh, I had a little bit to do with it. So I'll give Bernie a lot of credit on that. We raised incredible children together before Bernie transitioned of Alzheimer's during COVID, not of COVID. And one of those exciting things about raising these two kids is that while we never encourage them to come into the business nor discourage them, we encourage them to live the lives that they could find fulfilling and to be good citizens and decent human beings in the process. It's so thrilling for me that Kay and Brett work so well together. Kay manages the Nunn Company investments. That's real estate, stock, et cetera, family portfolio. And Brett has worked alongside me in the business for so many years, and quite soon he will be CEO of the company. How far can the company go generationally? At least another one. How far can it go in what we offer to the world? I think it is exciting for me to get to see it myself. And so I'm glad about the question, because I did reference quite quickly that we are now providing agentic solutions, and we're providing that under the name of ARIA. When you think of what an ARIA is, and then you think of the orchestration that's necessary to manage all of the other agentic type and AI type solutions that companies are rushing into, oftentimes without understanding the implications of them, the opportunities that they bring, or even the risks that are associated with that. So we're bringing in an orchestration to them that allows them to manage these various AI engagements that they have within the organizations, and we're providing agentic workers to them as well. I think that the company can go quite far. One of the things that we have to do, though, is assure that we keep the original values intact. And one of our original values does say that the worker is the center of the universe. And so when we refer to human beings and we're referring to AI as ways to get work done, it's my prayer that the company will continue to grow, and that the company will grow understanding that it is all in service to humankind.
Back to the idea of family and all your responses. I love that. It sounds like we're going to have a lot more to write about in the future. So that's exciting. We've established, you know, it's one of the largest privately held workforce solution firms in the entire world. Mm-hmm. And you've been able to do it independently. So many businesses out there, they've got to take in private equity. They need to grow a certain way. How have you been able to do it without outside equity, given the amount of growth?
So that's a different answer depending on where we are in the growth of the company. Initially, I would have welcomed, loved, and I can sit here and candidly say likely benefited a lot more and had a very different looking company had I had the opportunity to invest in. Back when I was first out there on my grind, that was not an opportunity that I would find. We just weren't there as a society, nor as an economy.
Those today, investors probably wish today they had.
So yeah. So today, though, that looks quite different. And the journey between then and now, the way we were able to do it is that we provided such awesome service that we were also thoughtful about how we graded that service forward. Listen, I've received so many awards and I welcome and I'm thankful for them all. The truth is, we could have had a much better story had we had that type of investment. And you and I both know that. All three of us know that. Now, what I will say is that the company is ripe for that type of investment, because now we're providing different solutions to the marketplace. And it requires us to be more of a tech company than a people company. Think about it now. 1978, I'm making a deal with a guy who owns a rug shop. It was a beautiful location. It was a great place for people to come into. The real estate was a safe area. All of those things were quite natural for the industry then. We don't do business that way anymore.
Yeah.
And so the opportunity then to marry what we know so well from a legacy perspective to what we see as a very near future way that people work and that companies get work done is where we are. And I'm excited to see where Brett will lead the company and his entertainment of taking in that type of financial support that assures it grows.
So do you still consider it a family business today?
It is a family business today. The family pays the taxes.
We've been fortunate enough here on PNC C-Speak to have been joined by a number of CEOs and successful CEOs. In today's shifting labor market, hybrid work, talent shortage, economic uncertainty, what advice would you have for CEOs in terms of how they should pay attention to the labor force?
I think I'd likely say the same things that my beloved mother-in-law shared with me on one of my first visits to England when I was not expecting to be her daughter-in-law. I was just having fun and hanging out with her son. But she weaved that conversation in and it got around to kids. And I was sharing with her that if her son and I were to marry and have children, they would be referred to as African-American in the United States. And I'm not going to try to give you a British Yorkshire accent. Actually, hers was Lancashire, okay? But it was rich, and it was a, well, my dear, wouldn't Bernard have anything to do with it at all? You know, why wouldn't he count in it? And we went on to talk about having children, and she said something, and this is what I'd say to CEOs. She said, your children more attention pay to what you do than what you say. And I think that is something that we need to be cognizant of and live really strong to as CEOs, as leaders in any fashion. People are paying attention to what we do. We don't get to erase mistakes anymore. We can apologize for mistakes. We can correct errors. We don't get to erase them. Mm. That footprint of every activity and every thought, in some instances, everything you say is there for life. And so we need to be thoughtful about that and thoughtful of the people we hire. And we need to also understand that we're not the ones running the company. You know, my mom said to me years ago, the moment you hire someone, you just became not the most important person in that organization.
And building off of that, you know, people we hire, how do you keep your mission and really your culture alive, given so many teams, so many clients, so many countries? You mentioned earlier the idea of the countries adopting a little bit of their own culture based on the region that they're in and what's important, the norms. How do you do that, though, while keeping one company culture?
For me, years ago, it was about being local, not global.
Global.
Okay. We were going to do business across the globe. We were going to do it locale by locale by locale, location by location by location. Back to what my friend Jack taught me about Walmart, going in with a great solution, but that great solution is not going to fit every community in the same way. And so understanding that, I think also having ideals in an organization is something that is global. That's why one song can be on the top of a chart in every country you go into, because there's something about the messaging in it. There's something about the values or the emotions it's expressing that touches us all as human. When Brett was a little boy, we carried Brett and Kay into Russia. We went into Georgia and attended an opera, and everybody laughed at the same time and cried at the same time. And this was a tourist trap, you know, event. So people were coming in there speaking all languages, and majority of us did not speak the language of the opera. Yet we knew when to cry and we knew when to laugh. And my husband looked around that room, and as we exited, he said, what was the thing that we all had in common? And I said, oh, well, you know, it's only seven notes, but it took us to so many places emotionally. And he said, that's true. But I think the thing we all had in common is that we all want the same thing. And so we hear the laughter in the music, or we hear the anguish in the music. And, you know, you build up the drama in the music, and we all were responding to the music. Half of us didn't know the story of the opera, and we'd had a great time. And I think that's what's important for companies to get back to. how are we orchestrating what we deliver to market, and how are we allowing our teams to be a part of that? When they understand what we're delivering to market and they care about it, for us, it is about making certain that the worker is the center of the universe. It does not matter how much technology is involved in that. It does not matter how much money or currency is involved in that. It is about how much heart and understanding of the people you're serving is involved in that. We just got back from the Bahamas. We'd taken some of our top performers from across the world on a trip to the Bahamas and a cruise. And when we honored them in the auditorium on that ship, there were many languages that people spoke. All I had to do was walk out on that stage to two songs. The wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round. And then we went into Old MacDonald Had a Farm, E-I-E-I-O. And the audience did just what you did. They smiled. They broke out. They laughed.
I almost started singing, but I wasn't sure.
And hey, look, you probably do it better than I do.
We all know those songs, yeah.
But what am I saying here? We all have families. We all have kids. And when we're really fortunate, we keep the kid we were inside of us. And so we relate to that. And that's how you grow a company, understanding that people are people. It's a simple thing. Simple doesn't always mean easy. It is a simple thing to step back and get outside of yourself. Every great idea does not a great business make.
Well, JBH,
people build great businesses.
If you don't mind, let me remind myself to call you when we're looking for our next keynote for our Best Places to Work event. Because I love everything you're saying. It's so inspiring. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to.
You've talked about you're clearly the conductor, the maestro in this orchestra of a company. But you also talked about sometimes it's good and it's okay to fail quickly.
Yeah.
Talk about a time when it didn't work or when you made a mistake and what you learned from it.
So if I talk about times where I've made mistakes, I can collectively share that with you. Individual opportunities to learn have occurred under contract.
Fair enough.
Let's be mindful of that. In aggregate, though, I would say the biggest errors that I have had have come from me as an individual not embracing that I could be, and I've said it publicly before, I am smart and I am female at the same time. You talked about investment and taking in. Mm-hmm. And so for me, being Black, being smart, and being female at the same time have been the hurdles that I have placed along my journey. Other people have certainly put them in front of me, but stuff that happens early on can stick with you through life. Sitting here in front of you, a 70-plus-year-old woman, although I'm happy to say I had my physical and I'm aging very, very
backwards.
Well.
Actually,
you know what? I'm going to pat myself on the back and say yes, because that's exactly what Dr. Williams told me. And she was shocked that I have that zero plaque around my heart. And I said, well, were you looking for it for a reason or whatever? She said, no, but it's just so amazing. I don't have another,
you're doing something right.
To. Yeah. And when I'm sharing that with you, it's not out of a place of, okay, I've come through some big evolution. There's still moments where I'm highly mindful that I'm the only woman in the room, or that I'm the only Black in the room, or that the things that I cherish about my Blackness may be seen as boastful or alienating instead of embracing an additive. And as a 70-something-year-old woman, my childhood those years ago was in a segregated community. And Panola Street divided Black from white in our town, and we had two Jewish families there who were not integrated into the white community there, at least from where I could see. And my 11th grade year, I was the one sent to integrate the schools. The federal government said, you will integrate or you'll lose your funding. And our school decided that they would send the smartest kids over to the white school to test the integration process. And I got sent. So for me, it felt like a punishment, especially since the school that I was attending was right across the street from my house. Okay. Right. And the white school was across town. My brothers would escort me to school, and then they'd get out early and come to pick me up to, you know, for physical security. And I can tell you, as I'm talking with you, Josh and Todd, I still react to the memory of having a young girl who was so beautiful take her own feces and throw it on my face.
Oh, my goodness.
And my mom helped me through that. My mom told me, first of all, if you want to leave school every time something like that happens, understand you'll be failing this first year. She also taught me to be able to project my consciousness to where I want it to be, regardless of where I was. Now, I don't know what you were thinking about when you were in the 11th grade, but every day I went to school thinking about how am I going to survive from 8 till 3:30 in the day without getting physically hurt, without getting my homework torn up or, you know, and those kinds of things that people do when they don't want you present. So when you say, okay, your parents had such a big influence on you. Now, naturally, my dad said you could leave. You don't have to stay. But then he also reminded me that he and mom would sell the house and the earth under it to make sure all of us were educated, because in our house, we were taught education is freedom. And it never, after dad sat me down, occurred to me that I wouldn't make it through the year. But making it through the year has enabled me to make it through life.
That's amazing.
And to do it for other people. Yeah, I went back and I graduated from as one of the last class members of the segregated school, W.A. Patillo High School in Tarboro, North Carolina. My senior year was the last year of segregation of that school. I graduated performing at the top reading level in the nation, as did many of my peers, right? Just over a year ago, two young men, Herring brothers, reached out to me. They're the sons of a classmate from my high school. And they said, our mission is your passion. Well, that's a great opening, right? So I'm listening now.
You got my attention.
Yeah, you got my attention. And wow, did they get my attention? Because that same school system that graduated me from a segregated school, reading at par with the nation, was graduating students with reading levels 4th to 6th grade, irrespective of race, you know? And so they wanted to do something about it. They're both in education. One's a music teacher, the other's a principal of a school. And we started the BH2 Stream School, which is science, technology, reading, engineering, arts, AI, and math. And we're focusing on graduating students who are at a reading level that is at par or above with the nation. We find that in our business, people perform better in their careers when they read with better comprehension.
What a story.
Yeah.
Let's go backwards, though, to the beginning of the company. You and your husband actually started and had two different companies at one time, and then merged them together. I think it was Act One and Apple One. Is that right?
That's right.
What was this experience like, working with your husband personally, professionally? Talk a little bit about that.
So, you know, we would share with people that, yeah, we are competitors, and we were ripe competitors in the marketplace.
Who started the company first?
And he would say, oh, you were no competition at all for me. And to answer you, I'd often say back to him, yeah, but who's working for who now? You know, so we were leaving an event in San Diego, and our son had called me, Brett. And Brett's attended USC, fight on. And he said, Mom, they're scheduling these interviews with companies, and I know that I want to work in our company. So am I taking a spot from somebody to accept these interviews that were following, you know, yeah. and getting job offers, right? And I loved the integrity in that, but it did cause me thought, because the question for me was, well, who are you going to work for, your dad or your mom? Didn't ask him that. Didn't ask him that. Asked did you do, myself
did you
that.
Did you know the answer, though?
And so, yeah.
Okay.
So, look, that little nappy-headed colored girl out of Tomboy, North Carolina, okay? I did. I talked with Bernie, and I said, we really got to be thoughtful about this, because it does require that we give him options that he can enjoy, right? And that's when we decided, why not merge them? And he was ready for the merger. He stayed interested in the business for a long time, and the imprint he made, not just in the company, but in the industry, is one that is phenomenal. Knowing when it's time to pass the baton, I think, is so important to winning the race.
So you mentioned that. You now, it sounds like, have decided it's time to pass the baton.
Absolutely it is. And boy, am I grateful to have someone in Brett Howroyd who not only knows the business and has grown up in the business, he's grown up outside of the business okay. as well, and has a passion of investment
into the
business.
What does he do different? What does he bring differently or more dynamic or better that you haven't been able to bring to the company?
One thing that he did do, and I shared this with you, is he and his sister brought Aria into the company, which is the agentic approach to how we get work done. And okay. I think that that's going to impact not only so many companies, it's already made an impact inside of how we operate as a business as well.
Thanks for sharing so much about your background, your family. I love hearing about passing the baton. It's a new generation and everything's changing. Everything's changing. I said earlier, we're all tech companies, whether we want to be or not. That is just the direction of the future. What advice would you give companies today who are maybe struggling to integrate AI and technology because they really want to maintain that human-centric culture, but you kind of have to do both? What advice would you give them?
It is the best of times and the worst of times, right? And so you get to decide what that is for you if you are in a leadership role in a company or if you're heading a company, particularly if you're an entrepreneurial lead to a company. My advice then is to be certain that you're hiring people who are a lot smarter than you are about that. And then put your knowledge on top of where that is and embrace it. Go for it. I mean, there were people who really wanted a better or faster horse. They weren't looking for a car, right? There are people who didn't imagine that they could add not just quality, but quantity to their lives with the enablement of a pacemaker. Right. AI has been around since mid-century. It's not a new thing. I think that what is important is that you embrace it in new ways. And I do say embrace. I lean in on the word embrace. And I'm excited about what it can offer to us, not just as business owners, as a society as well. We can equalize opportunities, and I think we can monetize ideas differently. There's just so much that can be won when you remember to keep the humanity in it.
Right. You've broken so many barriers in business. You built a company that will ultimately last multiple generations. When you think about legacy and your legacy and your company's legacy and your family's legacy, what matters most to you?
Just about 2 years ago, a bishop of one of the largest churches in this nation asked me that question on stage. And my answer was, I don't think about legacy. And I went home and I lamented having answered him in that way. Because the truth is, whether I'm thinking about legacy or not, legacy is occurring. For me, leaving a legacy that speaks to all of us. And when I say all of us, I mean as human beings, all of us appreciating that we, and you hear it so often said and not so often lived to, have so much more in common than we do in difference. And both of them are beautiful. What we have in common allows us to communicate well. What we have different about us allows us to learn, to pivot, to strive, to aspire, and have a real good time in the process.
All right, JBH, we are coming to an end of our conversation, and we're going to switch things up, okay? We're going to end it in kind of a fun day. We're going to do a speed round of questions. So for this part, I just want you to tell us the first thing that comes to mind when we ask you a question. Quick, snappy, short answers. Don't think too much.
And you think I'm going to do that?
We're going to try.
You think this African-American, over 70-year-old entrepreneurial woman is going to open her mouth just like that?
Close it right away afterwards. Yes, exactly.
Let's see what happens.
Oh, you really trust me.
All right, here we go. We're not storytelling. Quick answers.
Okay.
All right. Favorite spot for dinner in L.A.?
My home.
Oh, come on. That's too easy. What else?
That is my home.
All right.
I'm on the road 3 weeks out of a month.
Eating what?
Being at home, whatever I'm cooking that I learned to enjoy on the road. That's my deep truth, and I'm standing on it because I do like experiment. I'm not a great cook, but I'm an ambitious one.
Fair enough. Morning riser or night owl?
Both. Sleep is like little deaths to me. And my son is teaching me that I need the sleep. And he encourages me that if I want to be able to walk down the aisle with those grandbabies of mine, and I've got two, both under the age of two, that I'm going to have to use sleep because that's the only time we can repair our bodies.
All right. I love this next question because you can't go neutral.
I wasn't neutral. I was deliberate.
If you had a coffee meeting with your 18-year-old version of yourself tomorrow, what's the first thing you would tell that person?
Drink tea is better.
I love that. Right. If your leadership style were the title of a movie, what would it be?
Hire the best.
Hire the best. I like that.
A business book every CEO should read.
There's a little book. It doesn't even likely qualify as a book. It's more of a pamphlet. And it was originally written as A Man Thinketh. And I got the permission to rewrite it as A Person Thinketh. And for me, that's just, it made the difference.
Perfect. Favorite weekend getaway?
My house.
Favorite place to travel?
I love everywhere. Think about it now. I've been to over 60 countries, and many of them I've actually spent more than 3 days in.
with 47 offices and countries, I guess home is your weekend getaway.
Yeah, it is.
Guilty pleasure, TV show or streaming series?
All seasons of Downton Abbey.
Okay.
Okay, last question. Finish the sentence. The key to success is?
The progressive realization of a worthy ideal.
JBH, thank you so much for spending the time with us today. I learned a lot, not just about you and your background, but about the emphasis you put on family and culture and community. And I learned the word glocal today. That's pretty exciting. I'm going to use that. I won't coin it, but I'm going to use it if you don't mind. Thank you so much for being here today. And we wish you all continued success.
And thank you for sharing all the wonderful lessons that you've learned from your youth in North Carolina to your leadership now of a multi-billion dollar company here in the United States. What you've done is so admirable. We really appreciate that.
Well, it's the community work of a whole lot of people who really believe in a better humanity experience for all of us.
Thank you so much. And on behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC Bank, thank you for listening. To ensure that you are notified about our future podcast releases, please be sure to subscribe and follow. Thank you again. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, The Language of Executives.